Let's say something happens to mom. Now, mom knows her five sibs don't get along. Like her five children, they don't all get along. And it brings mom stress every day. The last day you want that to bring mom stress is when she's in the hospital. So I call these sick day rules. You have a group text. You, number one, ahead of time, when they're not sick, you decide who is coordinating the communication for mom. Let's say it's daughter number one. Okay, great. Create a group of all the sibs. You only use it on sick days. You can call it sick day rules. If something happens to mom, for that caregiver, the communication is a huge burden. So they use this group text. They're the only ones communicating with the providers. Providers don't have time to talk to the five of you because you don't get along. Mom needs to know while she's in the hospital recovering from her heart attack, her children use sick day rules. And they're going to be talking and communicating. It's a relief to mom.
You're listening to Cold Press Conversations with Dr. Jewel White Williams, a lover of numbers, lists, and a good glass of cold press juice, who is sharing episodes each week to help you explore the back end of healthcare and health sciences, where a lot of that grit is done. We'll dive into topics covering research, education, and clinical practices, as well as guest shows with other leaders in the field. Pull up a seat and let's dive into these amazing and game-changing conversations. Hello, this is Dr. Jewel White Williams, and I am here with an amazing guest today. I have nurse Cheryl Field. She has a master's in nursing. But before we begin, I just want to say thank you very much for coming to Cold Press Conversations. This is going to be an invigorating conversation. It's very dear to me. This conversation is going to be extremely dear to me because we're going to be talking about aging. We're talking about being prepared for aging. We're going to be talking about how it is to be a caregiver and what the intrinsic parts are of being a caregiver. And that is going to be pivotal for anybody of any age. And I say that because I began being a caregiver at age 24. And as I did it for seven people. So I'm telling you today, you are going to receive information that is valuable, necessary, and important as anyone ages, regardless of age. And it's also good for yourself because you become even more so an advocate as you move forward. I have Ms. Cheryl Fields. She has 30 plus years of experience in nursing, specializing in rehabilitation and post-acute area with a focus on analytics, compliance, quality, and reimbursement. She has served various roles, including clinical director, VP of healthcare, and chief product officer. She has spoken at state and national conventions for over 25 years on various healthcare industry topics. A two-time international best-selling author, Cheryl's recent book, Prepared, a healthcare guide for aging adults, guides caregivers all over the world with her system of advocacy, which anyone can follow. She makes learning complex systems easy with simple analogies and relevant and often personal stories to maximize audience engagement. Cheryl is a certified rehabilitation nurse and is recently certified in machine learning and artificial intelligence from MIT. She holds a bachelor's of science in nursing from the University of Rochester and a master of science in nursing from Boston College. She is married for over 30 years to her third grade sweetheart, Ted, and has three children, Michael, Rebecca, and Jennifer. I want to say welcome, Cheryl.
Thank you so much, Dr. Jewel. What a pleasure to be here. Thank you so much for that kind introduction. I really don't know how I've done all of that just in like 30 years on this planet.
You know, time flies when you're having fun.
And we have 100% been having fun. In fact, I loved how you mentioned that you were a caregiver at 24. I actually started being a caregiver at age 10. I was sitting with my grandmother who had end-stage emphysema. I went on to sit with neighbors who had Parkinson's disease. And at 15, I took my first in-home job where I was an overnight nursing assistant from Friday after school until Monday morning for a gentleman who actually was patented for inventing the fitted sheet. So very early on.
Are you serious?
Yeah. It was very early on, I had a calling for, you know, really caring for our most vulnerable, you know, those seniors in our space who had paved the way for others and, you know, lived the life. I felt they had so many stories to share, and there was so much that I could learn from them that I was just attracted to this type of care.
I have to say, when you care for someone, whether it is a family, friend, or just anyone who needs your help, talking to them, you get such a wealth of information from them, don't you?
It's really, you know, honestly, I loved being a caregiver. I loved being a certified nursing assistant. And I remember your parents will say to you, you're too smart to be a nurse. You know, go be a doctor. But I loved direct care. I loved putting someone to bed and washing their feet, giving them a little foot massage, and having them say to me, I've lived in this nursing home for 2 years and no one has ever washed my feet. You know, those kinds, that kind of feedback that comes to you as a human, it is the greatest gift we have to give, you know, kindness and mercy to one another, especially at a time where we're not able to care for ourselves. We're not healthy. So it's 100% my passion, you know, both being a nurse, that's a type of a caregiver when you work for a provider, as well as being an advocate caregiver, maybe an unpaid caregiver. The world is full of them. And let's be honest, 70% of women worldwide, average age of 49, make up our caregivers. So I know I'm talking to you and you and you. All of you listening in are managing your families, maybe those little, not so littles that are, you know, now high school, college. Average age 49, you're near the peak of your career. You've got pressures at work. You have aging parents. You might even be facing this thing we all call menopause.
Yes.
That's fun. And on top of that, you have potentially a relationship with a partner that you're trying to nurture. So as a caregiver, women, you are really sandwiched between all of these pressures. And so thank you for all of you who serve in that role, paid and unpaid. It is critical to the human condition that we care for one another. And I'm just, again, so blessed that you would offer up this time where we could talk about the amount of work that I placed in this one book called Prepared, which you said caregivers or you're, you know, an aging person on this planet. There are common themes that we all need to learn and level up in order to really get the best care near the end of life. And so that's the reason I did that writing and put that work together, because, you know, I knew the system as a provider, a paid provider, a paid caregiver, if you will, but I saw a lot of gaps in the care that was being delivered from the family advocacy side. And so to fill those gaps, I designed systems that I use. And I didn't want it to be like a family recipe, a secret, you know, those secret recipes no one shares. No, I want everyone to know my recipe. I want everyone to know that you can really guide your loved one or yourself through changes in health, through the system, and leverage, you know, what you need from that system. And that's why I wrote Prepared. You know, I didn't want it in my head. I didn't want it in my heart. I wanted it in the world. And so sat down to do that work. And that's why we're here tonight.
Well, I'm going to say you brought up two things that I think is important. As I was a caregiver for my parents, and it was an extended period of time because mom cared for dad, and then I cared for dad because mom died unexpectedly. The thing about it is a lot of people don't realize, you mentioned the word sandwich. It's called the sandwich generation. Mm-hmm. We talk about all the different kind of generations that we have. We have the Gen Z, millennials, we go through the whole process. But it is really a true generation, the sandwich generation. Do you mind going a little bit into the definition of what a person is when they're considered a part of the sandwich generation?
I'll share with you what it means for me. And that, again, think about a sandwich. You're in the middle, you know, of a couple of slices of bread. You're in that center. So So again, if you really put yourself into a 40, 50, you know, 60-year-old woman's, maybe younger, like you said, for you, it started younger. You have your own children who have needs from you as a caregiver. Think of them as the bread on the left. And then you may have your own parents, grandparents, aunts, and uncles on the right. And you're in that middle. You're the meat. Everyone is really trying to get a bite of. They need you without even really considering your own personal needs, your needs for resilience, your needs for stress management. Then on top of that sandwich, you have your own career to maintain. You absolutely have your own health and mental health concerns to maintain. The sheer number of roles that a person tries to play becomes so complex and so complicated. They really are sandwiched between the needs of others. And as I said, everyone's trying to take a little bite out of you. And at some point you worry that there's nothing left, you know, for yourself as that caregiver. So that's how I define the sandwich generation. But you may have a different definition from textbooks or academia that you want to share.
No, not actually. I like to just say it from experience, because in which we're going to discuss, it deals with multiple areas. Your own health, because there are statistics, and I'm not going to go into it. I'm going to let you give the statistics, but there are statistics about the health of the caregiver. And one reason I realized I needed to take not a step back per se, but a step back and really take a focus on who I was while I was caregiving is because I was sitting in my parents' place reading an article. And I can't quote where it was because they had multiple articles and books and magazines. And it was about caregiving. So I wanted to read a little bit about caregiving. And they gave a statistic about how many caregivers pass before the person they're caregiving for. That was alarming to me. I'm like, hold on a second, I'm in my 40s right now. What? I can't do this. And at the time, my plate was full. Mm-hmm. I was a mom. I was a wife. And I was a principal at the same time and still caring for my family. Mm-hmm. Let's talk about that. Talk about how that actually plays a huge role in caregiving.
Yeah. So I will share with you, I do a talk for caregivers and I talk with them about their stress and I talk about the gaps. And so I think the first observation that I have of caregivers is it's like they go to school and they come home with their Wonder Woman bracelets. They have this myth in their head that they have to do it all. So one of the first questions that I ask them is, I actually make them pretend that as a caregiver, look at the plan you have in place for your loved one. And are you the cook? Are you the taxi? Are you the housekeeper? Are you doing the lawn? Are you removing snow? Are you doing their bath? Are you doing, hopefully, your own bath? Are you doing all of the laundry? Are you going all the grocery shopping? Are you physically moving them about? Plus doctor's appointments, plus. Now, if you're doing all of that, I have them draw a picture, you know, of all the multiple roles they're fulfilling. And then I say, well, what happens to your loved one if you're not in that picture? To your point, the stress will oftentimes create heart attack, stroke, depression. Mm-hmm. How about just plain old illness? You know, your immune system is so impaired by that chronic stress, you get everything. Especially, like you said, you were a principal, you were working in, you know, the petri dish of schools, bringing all that stuff home to yourself and to your parents. So I make them draw on paper all the roles. Then I make them erase themselves. And I ask them to look at how far apart are those resources? How close to completing the gap are they? If they are everything, their loved one has nothing. So I encourage them to, and this is a tip that I give.
Okay.
Always be aligned with the strategic decisions and delegate as many as you can of just tactic, just getting done. We've decided you're going to go to radiation for 4 weeks. That was a decision. I went to the doctors. We made a strategic decision. We understand the care treatment plan. You know what? Delegate every single one of those rides. Don't be driving under radiation. Be involved in strategy. Delegate the execution. And I say that because if you were then to draw out the plan for this person, if there's someone to drive to radiation, someone else is picking up groceries, someone else is coming over once a week and doing some music therapy, watching a movie, playing cards, someone else is doing the laundry, someone else is doing the lawn, then your job is go to doctor's appointments, go to work, try to exercise, like take care of yourself, and get someone to help with the showers. And the reason I say that is, now take yourself out of the plan. There's very little gap in a plan that's well-resourced, that's dynamic, that has many, many players just in execution. And what I really encourage caregivers to do is stay in strategy, seek resources very early in the job. Please don't get into it for 6 months all alone, becoming Wonder Woman, becoming depressed. Then you become that caregiver who has a heart attack or has a stroke or falls out of exhaustion. Oftentimes, older caregivers are so busy trying to care for their loved one that they don't hydrate properly. They have bladder infections. They become septic. Suddenly, as you said, someone dies before someone else. It wasn't expected. And it's because the stress of caregiving. And so we do have to surround our caregivers with resources for themselves, resources for the person they're caring for, resources for the whole family. And I say, do that early. Don't wait until you're burnt out to say, I can't do this anymore. Right from the beginning, go in and come up with a plan so you're not doing all the jobs.
I like the way that you were teaching and giving the tips. And as you know, Cold Press Conversation is when you take all that good stuff and you give the good information to let people move forward. You are a writer, you are a nurse. And I really would like for you to just give some key messages or strategies that you would like to empower our caregivers with that would also help improve senior care outcomes.
One of the first empowerment concepts is don't give choices you don't have. And the contrast of that is give lots and lots and lots of choice. You use a fantastic word, which is empowerment. So what do I mean when I say that? Don't give choices you don't have. We just went to a meeting where we decided you're going to do 4 weeks of radiation. It's been a decision. The medical regime says, let's do this. You're diabetic, going to take insulin. It's not a choice not to take it. However, who drives you? Do you want to do it in the morning? Do you want to do it at night? What do you want to wear when you go? What would you like to eat before? What would you like to eat after? Give that person for whom you're providing care all those choices. Let your diabetics go to the grocery store, or if they're using an app to order the groceries, that can be involved in planning the menu, picking their favorite proteins, their favorite carbs, their favorite, fruits and vegetables. So they feel empowered. Now they're not eating, donuts and chocolates and bonbons because they're diabetic, but you're letting them choose that low glycemic index, a sugar-free treat that really fits within their medical regime. That's empowering. It gives a sense of purpose. In fact, I encourage, caregivers to say to the person, what are we eating this week? You figure out the menu. Gives them purpose. It's one less thing for you to do. And they have a sense of control. At a time in our life when we're losing our health, we really feel out of control. And so as many opportunities for control that we can give helps with the mental health of the patient. It reduces the amount of burden on the caregiver. For women, we have a hard time setting boundaries.
We do.
This idea of not giving choices you don't have, but going out of your way to give lots and lots and lots of choices is a really nice way of saying you got to draw some boundaries and then enforce them. And within those boundaries, give some empowerment, give some purpose, give some freedom to that human who's otherwise, feeling a bit like they're losing out on some control.
As a caregiver, you tend to ditch some of your fun stuff that makes you whole. When we consider your book prepared, A Healthcare Guide for Aging Adults, what would you say? because I'm going to be honest with you, as a writer, I know you're partial to your book. Super partial. But even as a writer, and the way that you are instructing, because you are instructing, you're giving us an invaluable lesson today as we age. What would you say was one of your favorite sections to write?
Probably one of my favorite sections was also an area where people really have the most feelings of fear and uncertainty. Through the work, I feel that I give them the gift of calm and confidence. The book is, you know, two parts. The first part is all the information you should have already in advance of a sudden change in health. Every single person should read part one and do the paperwork. You know, power of attorney, HIPAA forms, medication assessments, pain, activities of daily living, really understanding yourself. And all these resources I have on my website, so I save pages and I'll refer people to come to the website and, you know, find the form you need and complete it. Go back every time. The rest of the book is now that sudden change in health has happened and it's very tactical. It walks you through, you know, you're headed to the emergency room. What should you bring? Here's a checklist. What should you ask? Here's some questions. What's going to happen? Because you don't know. The same is true for the hospital phase. And the part that is so hard for people that are aging is facing a short stay in a nursing home for rehabilitation. Nobody wants to go. And the piece of the work that became my favorite was really thinking that decision through, thinking about it like a stock investment. You know, you buy a stock, you don't want to sell it on the way up. Like you want to let it go and go and go before you sell. And if you just go into a hospital and you get a couple days of care and they really recommend that you continue the healing journey at a skilled facility for a short period of time, that's a ticker on the rise. Don't sell too soon. Don't shortcut yourself. See the positives that you can gain from those providers. Leverage the offerings that they have. And in order to do that, you have to level up. So I teach them, here are the names of the people by title you're going to see when you get to that center. Here's what they do. Here's what you can ask them. And the parts where you partner with them to leverage what you need from the system with a goal of going home. And at what point can you go home safely that you're going to stay home and not, you know, end right back up in that hospital setting. So that's the hardest part for most people is to transition multiple times, an emergency room and upstairs to be admitted. And now, you know, it's been a few more days and you're still not able to really move around by yourself or manage your own pain, manage your own medicine. Maybe you're learning something new from the health condition that's occurred and you need a little more time to really balance that body. Take the time, you know, invest in yourself. Make sure you have services around you before you transition and ask those questions ahead. I walk people through how to think about finding a facility. I try to demystify some of the rating systems. They do a terrible job helping you to understand if the facility is really going to be able to meet your needs. So kind of walk them through that systematically. It's a hard part here and it's a hard part here, but there's so much good that comes from that partnership.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I also work with the community paramedic program. I'm the one who helps with the scheduling. I may attend the IDT meetings. And oftentimes, we may get in a position where I make a call home and the patient goes, and not just one, I've had a couple, you know, maybe I should have done the rehabilitation.
They can go right back in. I actually teach them that. So when you're a Medicare beneficiary or a managed care beneficiary, and you've had a stay in a hospital, if you don't go to that rehab facility, you actually have 30 days to go back in. So
thank you for mentioning it. Thank you.
Yeah. You know what? I sort of teach it like an amusement park. You know, when you leave an amusement park and they stamp your hand, do you want to come back today? And I'm like, you always want to think you're coming back, but you know, you're not coming back that day.
Right.
But the stamp that the hospital puts on your hand when you leave, it's good for 30 days. So you could re-enter that rehab facility and receive those skilled services for 30 days from the time that you leave that hospital, When you do go home, I know the nurses tell people this, but in the haste and the panic and the rushing to get home, nobody remembers that, oh, by the way, if things don't go well when you get home, you could actually go to that rehab facility. Now you have to make a phone call, make sure they have a bed, get all that information ahead of time. However, it's an option. And I want people to know that so they don't get home and really decline to the point where, you know, they become septic, they pass. You know, people unfortunately wait too long to re-access healthcare. And that's the poor health outcomes that I see. And that's why the important messages within Prepared actually level up. The only person really accountable for your health outcomes is you. Mm-hmm. And so I want everyone to have, you know, me as their expert by their side as they're moving through the system and have, you know, like I said, I didn't want it to be a knowledge base and a recipe, a system that I know and I follow. I want it to be a system that's simple, that everyone can learn and follow every single time it happens. And you know, from being a caregiver, going in and out of the hospital is a repetitive process, as sometimes the uncertainty and the fear can be overwhelming. But if you have a plan and you have a system, you go in with confidence. And, you know, recently a member of my family who has a copy of the book had a neighbor that they were advocating for through a transition. And so, you know, this person says to me, you just don't understand. I'm running around the hospital with, you know, four or five different bookmarks in the book. And I'm just turning to the page and saying, okay, do you see this? I need these answers. And the feeling was, although this person wasn't medical, they actually knew what to do. It gave them a confidence. It gave them direction. And that's what I really want to make sure. There are 60 million Americans just in the United States over the age of 65. And every day, 10,000 more reach age 65. And that's going to continue for another, I don't know, 3 to 5 years.
Yeah, they did say.
My real concern is they are not prepared for the sudden changes that are coming. So I want themselves and or their adult children, their caregivers, their neighbors, whoever is in their circle to know about this very affordable resource that gives them that empowerment, that gives them that calm and that confidence. I'm not saying it's going to be easy, but I'm going to say you're going to go in with a plan, which makes you in charge and not just, I don't want to say a victim of the system, but you get lost in the system. You really do get lost with misinformation and misguidance and just uncertainty. You don't know where to turn. And Prepared turns you into a well-organized, assertive, confident advocate caregiver.
It takes away the overwhelm. That's what you're trying to do, is take away that overwhelm. The first time go round, it was only because I'm a researcher. I like to figure out what to do. And and the process did go pretty smooth.
One more nugget. Yeah. I think this is like the $1 million nugget. I call it sick day rules. You know, not every family member gets along.
Mm-mm.
Mm-mm. However, there are people in the family who should be communicated with in case, let's say, something happens to mom. Now, mom knows her five sibs don't get along. Like her five children, they don't all get along. And it brings mom stress every day. The last day you want that to bring mom stress is when she's in the hospital. So I call these sick day rules. You have a group text. You, number one, ahead of time, when they're not sick, you decide who is coordinating the communication for mom. Let's say it's daughter number one. Okay, great. Create a group of all the sibs. You only use it on sick days. You can call it sick day rules. If something happens to mom, for that caregiver, the communication is a huge burden. So they use this group text. They're the only ones communicating with the providers. Providers don't have time to talk to the five of you because you don't get along. Mom needs to know while she's in the hospital recovering from her heart attack, her children use sick day rules. They're going to be talking and communicating. It's a relief to mom. So for all of you out there who, it's okay that you don't get along every other day, but when somebody goes face down in your family, you all get along for the betterment of that person. And they know ahead of time, this is how you're going to behave. It reduces the stress, which is enormous at that time when something happens to your loved one. It reduces that tension of not getting along. And I think in a nice way, it sometimes shows people that they actually can get along more than they thought they could.
And that's the reason why I was bringing up, it was smooth. But I've been in situations where it's not personally, but for others, and I've witnessed how it can't be. And I'm glad you talked about the sick day rules. That is so important. And it helps out the hospital. It helps out if they're in a nursing home, assisted living, or even in a larger independent facility that actually has someone who speaks on their behalf. It gives them that option to have that one person to talk to instead of trying to return 5 and 6 and 7 calls because of cousins, sisters, children. It can go on and the list can get more expansive.
And don't be that person.
I'm loving it.
Don't be that person who says, I'm calling anyway. Right. I'm going to call the hospital anyway. I know you are the one that's doing it, but you know what? I'm going to do it anyway. Don't be that person. Here's why. When you make that call, you take that nurse away from the bedside. It's either coming away from your mom or someone else's mom. And there are just not enough hours for nurses today. Our nurses are stressed. We as family members, we have to partner with our nurses and we have to behave. Where we have to acknowledge this and we have to behave. So have this conversation with nobody being sick. Set it up ahead of time, like a fire drill. You don't wait for the house to be on fire until you figure out where you're going to meet in the yard. It's done ahead of time and stick to the rules. It'll help the providers give better care to your loved ones. And it'll help the caregiver or the coordinator of information who's really dealing with a lot of stress. They don't need to have 4 phone calls at the end of the day giving everybody an individual update. No, 1 text group, send out the message. People can ask questions in the group. You answer the questions in the group. It's concise. It's easy. It's an important tip to reduce the stress for caregivers.
I'm so glad you mentioned that. Of course, I have some other questions. I just want you to just reiterate one thing. We both are mentioning the hospital. There's a team at the hospital. And a lot of people who have people who are at the hospital, they just see maybe just the doctor or they say, oh, there is the social worker. But there is, in fact, a large team that discusses and tries to give the best care. And that social worker or that case manager, because remember, there are multiple people, and it's 9 times out of 10, the case manager. And the case manager, 9 times out of 10, is a nurse. A lot of people don't realize that. They're like, oh, that's just, no, it's not just, it's a nurse, someone who had, that's why you have a nurse navigator. There's so many pieces to the puzzle. And that's why I needed you here today. I wanted them to hear it from you. And being a nurse who is really in to understanding why we must be prepared when we're working with our loved ones. Now, you talked about some instructional strategies here. I love the way that you talk about. What is one instructional strategy that you use as a game changer to help teach those who are caregivers?
Well, I love stories. And anytime I think I can share a personal story and show my vulnerability and where I made mistakes, because it's through our mistakes that we learn. It's through our mistakes where we build systems. So I do, as an instructional strategy, I like to be open, honest, raw, and share stories around where, even as a nurse, things that I might have known academically, but I didn't know it coming in as a caregiver. I really can't emphasize enough the importance of being prepared. And you mentioned that, you know, you've worked as an EMT. You've come into the home in an emergency where someone is maybe down on the floor, whatever. And if you're not ready for that moment, there's no catching up at that point. So I can't emphasize enough how important it is to do the work, to be prepared for a sudden change in health. And I hope for every one of you, it never happens, but the odds are against you that it will happen. So if you truly want to be in control, and I know you do, I know I do, having your advanced directives, having your durable powers of attorney for anyone over the age of 18, it's essential. In the absence of you being able to give instruction in the moment, someone in a court system will make decisions for you.
Thank you. I'm glad you made it.
And that is a burden to your family. Mm-hmm. I think we think about, oh, if I die, no big deal, right? Oh, they'll figure it out. It's not the death. It's the incapacitation that really is the challenge. And, you know, I learned this when I partner with experts in the estate planning. My book isn't about that, but my book does talk about, in the first part, getting these documents organized so that you remain in control and you know what that person wants for their health in the sudden change in health situation. So, I teach through stories. I have made these mistakes where someone that I loved was in a really bad spot and we did not have proper paperwork to make those decisions, although we had, you know, power of attorney, but we didn't have a will and we didn't have the ability to write a check and pay a bill. And that was really, really hard on the family. It was exhausting in both time and emotion. It took away from our ability to be present during the illness that was happening because there were other competing priorities. So my approach is just be genuine and be honest. And you'll see that through the book. I tell a lot of little stories of lessons that I've learned, and I've put everything I've learned, you know, packed it into the book, made it available in a digital format, a large print edition, you know, in addition to paperback, because I don't want anyone to feel a barrier to accessing this invaluable resource. And trust me, I wish someone else had written this book. I went and I looked and I looked and I looked and I said, someone else must have done this. It's so logical. It's a map. It's a navigator. No, it hadn't been done. And therefore there was a gap and I set my mind to filling that gap.
Oh, so give me one of your greatest moments as a health science professional.
I shared earlier, for me, there's no greater joy than easing the pain someone's experiencing in that moment, bringing them some mercy, some grace, some simple joy. As a direct care nurse, I could do that. Then I became a nurse leader who taught other nurses to give that care, that compassion. And my expression is, you know, you can be a chocolate chip cookie or you can be a chocolate chip cookie maker. Ooh. As my career moved on, I was blessed to move into clinical informatics, where I can build the software that nurse leaders use to understand what's happening in their population, to see changes in people's conditions before it's really obvious and really a train wreck. And there's probably no greater joy than knowing that the tools that I work on every day in artificial intelligence and with machine learning are building predictors that notify nurses of changes in condition before, as a human, we would pick up on it. I know that that helps that agency nurse, that tired nurse, the second shift nurse, that I'm a new nurse. It helps all of them to augment their decision-making. It'll never take the place of a nurse, but we can help with data, with predictions. We can help nurses to increase that index of suspicion, enhance the clinical decision they're about to make. That makes a difference in the care they deliver. It makes a difference in their resiliency in coming to work every day. And I know that touches that patient whose feet I loved to rub. It touches that patient in another way that's really powerful. So, you know, for me, my greatest moments are close to humans. And my greatest joy comes from the work that I do that empowers those humans who are in those direct care roles.
Mm. I'm so glad you had a chance to squeeze in your MIT stuff, because we're about to run out of time, but I have to say, this has been personally an amazing interview because it's dear to my heart. I've been there. I've seen it. I'm in the healthcare setting for the second time. But it's given me an opportunity to have someone with your expertise to share it with my audience. It is so important. I mean, it's critical. I want you to give me your favorite cold pressed juice. It's cold pressed juice conversation, so I want to know, what's your favorite cold pressed juice?
I'm a pomegranate.
Oh, are you really?
Gotta love me that pomegranate juice.
Yeah, I love pomegranate.
It's just got that little bite. It's clean.
Mm-hmm.
It feels refreshing. It cleanses that palate. That's a joy for me.
You're the first. I like that. I like that. Well, audience, hopefully you got a lot of nuggets from this. Cheryl Field, she is a MSNRN and everything in between, because she has written this book called Prepared, A Healthcare Guide for Aging Adults. And it's providing valuable guidance to caregivers worldwide. She's taking it where she is simplifying the complex systems through engaging storytelling and analogies. And it's important for you to please go on and get this book. Tell them where they can get it, please, Cheryl.
You know, you can get it on Amazon, Walmart, Barnes & Noble, any place, Books A Million, wherever you buy books, you can grab it there. You actually can also go to my website if you want a personalized copy. My website is www.cherylfield.com. And I'm happy to, you know, include a little note for someone and send it off to you in the mail. So however it's best for you to get a copy of Prepared, it's just best for you to get a copy of Prepared. And honestly, thank you so much for anyone who has already read the book or is going to read the book. Share it with your friends, your family. I do not want this to be a resource people simply don't know is there. So I'm on a mission to get to those 60 million Americans, and I cannot do that without a whole lot of help.
You're going to get there. You're going to get there. I'm telling you, we're going to make sure people hear about Prepared.
It's going to happen. It's like that old commercial. They told two friends and so on and so
right.
on. Remember those commercials? Verbal Essence, I think, in the 70s.
What is it called? How you're only like just a step away from someone who you know who's famous.
That's right. I have to say that I have had an extraordinary, ordinary life. I'm a regular down-to-earth gal, and I'm so honored to share my knowledge and my passions and my secrets with everyone. So thank you so much for your time. And thank you, audience, for listening. I know this was a long conversation. You know, message me on LinkedIn, message me on Facebook, come to my website, join my newsletter. If I can be of service to you, please send me an email. I'm here to serve.
That is amazing. Thank you once again, everyone, for tuning in to Cold Press Conversations. We've had the phenomenal guest, Cheryl Field. And I thank you for coming on and presenting to us so many tools so that we can be prepared as we age and as we caregive for others. May each one of you have a wonderful, wonderful day.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Cold Press Conversations. If you love this episode as much as I did, I need you to head on over and subscribe so you never miss an episode. This is Dr. Jewel signing off. To health and cognitive happiness.